try to never ask a question to your students that you're not genuinely curious about what each student's answer would be to that question. It has really set the tone for how I try to, you know, have a discussion-based class and build an environment where in overt and covert ways, I am constantly reaffirming back to my students, like, see, you're smart.
Hello, and thanks for joining us for this episode of The DINFOS Way. This program is dedicated to developing and showcasing the skills of military communicators, public affairs professionals, and industry experts from all over the world. I'm your host, Jack Rouse. I'm a former Navy and civilian journalist and a current training specialist here at DINFOS. Joining us today is DINFOS Intermediate Public Affairs Specialist Course Instructor, Shelby K. Fantozzi. She's a 10-year Air Force veteran who's taught here in uniform and as a civilian now. She has a master's degree in media technology and democracy and has been applying her skills here for 6 years now and has won more awards than I can count, including multiple Instructor of the Year wins. She's one of our most valuable and respected minds here and joins us today to talk about the IPASS course and to share some of her thoughts and experiences about the classroom and our career field. Shelby, thanks for joining us.
High praise. I'm blushing. Thank you.
I appreciate you again coming in. I know that you don't pat yourself on the back, so it'll all come from me. I really think that you're one of the best instructors we've had here. I've had the pleasure of working with you almost the entire time that I've been here, you know, and we get to see you take the stage and take the plaques, and it just makes me so happy. So thanks for joining us. I appreciate it.
My pleasure.
What is a little bit about your background? For anybody who doesn't know you, we always start off with a little bit about your career and how you got here as an instructor. So give me a little bit of a microcosm of your civilian and military career and how you got here.
Sure. I had a quick ride to DINFOS as an instructor. I joined the Air Force in July of 2013 and headed to basic training without a job lined up for myself.
I did the same thing. It was hard.
It was a little scary. You can really get anything. And I had a list of just about anything I was interested in. Got very lucky. Public affairs needed people as I was coming through. And so I wound up with this job and trained here at DINFOS in the fall and winter of 2013. I went to just one duty station, Cannon Air Force Base, and was there a little over 4 years, and got an assignment to DINFOS on the same day that I pinned on Staff Sergeant E5 rank in the Air Force. So I was really a young instructor coming into the building. It was a little intimidating coming to some of our training courses and sitting down with our commandant and knowing that my experience level was different from a lot of people in the room. But I also knew I had different training, including teaching all through college at a science museum.
Wow.
So I had a feeling that the teaching would be okay. Like, that's the part that I can really make work. I started out teaching the basic photojournalist specialty course for airmen. And then an opportunity came along to potentially work with this brand new course called the Mass Communication Foundations course. And I said, I want to try something new. That sounds cool. I taught the very, very first iteration of MCF with a team of awesome instructors from around the schoolhouse. And wrapped up my active duty time continuing to teach MCF. I enjoyed it a lot, but wanted a different kind of training based on other interests I had and global events. So I took a break in service and got my master's degree. And then I came back to active duty and worked for 2 years at the Air Force News Desk at DMA, the Defense Media Activity, now the War Media Activity. After working there for 2 years, I was interested in trying to do some more PA work out in federal world, out in the government. None of that panned out. And I found myself here on an alumni day surrounded by people who I really respected and who really respected me, who told me maybe I was being a little silly for not applying here and kind of coming back home to DINFOS. So that's how I wound up here. now teaching this intermediate course, which has been super rewarding.
Yeah, you've been over there for, I think you said 2 years now?
Just under, yep.
Man, and what an interesting career too, to have gone from teaching on the pre-MCF side, so you've done some legacy stuff, then to MCF, and I remember the first iteration too. It was interesting. It was a very interesting time.
It was interesting.
Especially because that was right during COVID, so... very interesting time. Mm-hmm. And so now you teach IPASC. And I want to ask you first, before we get into that, what was it like working for the Air Force News Desk over at the War Media Activity? Because I don't know anyone who's done that.
Working at the Air Force News Desk is great if you have that classic journalist's mind, by which I mean you're a little bit interested in everything and you want to know everybody's business. Basically, our main duty day by day was to understand the Air Force Chief of Staff's and the Secretary of the Air Force top communication priorities, top communication lines of effort, and trawl the internet for all of the articles written by small units, wings, individual units, find those articles that match with our communication priorities and edit those and post them to the AF.mil flagship website for the Air Force.
Man, so you're just scouring the internet for similar stories and reading all kinds of stuff. Man, heavily invested in all that information makes you such a valuable resource for current events and for things that are happening, especially for you said it was the Joint Chiefs that was for?
This, my role specifically was for the Secretary of the Air Force. Yeah.
I knew it was one or the other. I chose wrong. No, that's so cool. And it makes you, again, what a valuable resource for them to have all that information at their fingertips and that you have, you know, sort of put all that together and now it's at your fingertips too. That's really cool. So a lot of people are aware of the Public Affairs Communication Strategy Qualification course, which is what a lot of the public affairs folks in the military go through. IPASC is a different course. Can you tell me a little bit about what that course is and the differences between the two?
Sure. IPASC serves the student who is somewhere between graduating a foundation course like MCF or one of our legacy courses and qualifying and being ready for that leadership level course over in PAX-Q. Our general clientele, I guess you would say, our general student body is ranked from E4 to E6. Sometimes we get an E3, sometimes we get an E7. And civilian folks come to our course with some regularity as well. And there we talk about the transition from being a content producer to being a strategic planner. You know, so what would it mean for a non-commissioned officer or a petty officer to be in charge of, you know, a small group of troops in their public affairs or comstrat or masscom shop and be in charge not only of tasking those people out and managing, you know, things like calendar and budget, but also be in charge of telling the stories and releasing the media that our very, very top leaders in our service branches and in the Pentagon say are the priority of the day or the year.
So really it's like a initial first step, an entry level step into what you then further learn in the Public Affairs Strategy and Qualification course.
Yeah, I like to think it would make a graduate of this class would be an excellent like right-hand man to that right. Public affairs officer or comstrat officer, because they would understand the specifics of the communication mission very well. They would be able to contribute to or interpret the different types of planning documents that exist and go to their troops and say, here's why we're doing this. Here's the big picture. Now go execute.
That's great. And such an important entry-level step into what is then the larger two-month course. I think IPASC is 2 weeks.
IPASC is just 2 weeks, 10 training days.
Wow, that's such an interesting number of training days. And what do you guys cram in there? What does the course sort of look like?
So on our first day, we start with a lesson that I really love about information operations, the information environment, and a quick review of guidelines for release of information. And then we cover three big, really like planning documents that a mid-level military communicator might work on. The first is a briefing card. They not only write a briefing card, students in our class not only write a briefing card, they also conduct a SME prep session with instructors for their first exam. Then students work together to write proposed public affairs guidance on an issue. And finally, they work on workshop style. They work on solving a communication problem with communication planning. So the course is scenario-based. We use one scenario through the whole class, like some of our other courses. And they take that scenario through all of these different steps of how are we going to message about this issue in the short term? What are the key talking points around this problem in the long term? And what can we as communicators do to address the problem and be part of the solution team, you know, the tiger team, really getting at the issue, not just communicating about it to the public?
I want to focus on that because I think that was really important what you just said. You know, there's people think of public affairs as larger overall strategy, right? Mm-hmm. At the lowest level and at the lower levels, right, it's still our responsibility to present solutions and to solve problems. So how is it that you feel like the students really learn to solve those problems at this level and to present solutions to their leadership?
Well, we often have to hold students back from the temptation of hearing what the problem is and designing in their mind what the public affairs product will be. You know, sometimes they hear about, I'm going to use a pretend issue so that I don't do test compromise on our entire class. But, you know, let's say they hear about a morale problem at a unit, and the first thing they think about is, well, I could design a morale patch, and then we could have morale patch Fridays, and we could do a contest on social media, like, where do you wear your patch today? And it's our duty often to draw people way back and say, okay, well, first, we need to understand what this problem is. So we take students through the RPI process, which goes by a couple different names, but most graduates of DINFO's courses know in one form or another. We advise them on how to conduct research about a communication problem, really understand the environment they're in, and then go through some of the planning steps, which start very high-minded. I don't know if this is a thing across service branches, but in the Air Force, we always say, like, oh, we have to take the 30,000-foot view first, you know. And that's what students have to do in our course. They have to look at, you know, simulated communications from a commander and think to themselves, what does he want? How do I serve this leader's specific needs and interests around this issue? And then they move into, you know, communication objective setting and you know, coming up with themes and command messages and talking points, more PA bread and butter stuff. They have to do some project management. They build an implementation plan and a Gantt chart, and they have to show how they will evaluate for the effectiveness of the campaign as the campaign is happening and when it's over.
All such really important stuff that people don't realize that we do.
It's true.
Know, it's not just developing that social media poster, not just creating that poster. It's all of those things up to and evaluating the most, doing the most important thing, evaluating when you're done and making sure that you did the right thing and that it worked and all of that. 10 training days is such a brief period of time to fit all that in. What do you, obviously it works because we're producing great graduates who are doing good things out there. So what is it that you think is the most valuable thing that students sort of take away from the IPASS course as they prepare for their future in the career field?
I hope that what students take away from the course is a sense of agency. So not only within the realm of possibility, but it's encouraged or maybe even a responsibility for a mid-career military communicator to find communication guidance on whatever it is they're supposed to be documenting that day or releasing stories about that day or that week or month or on that exercise and understand what they're reading and understand why they're creating the media that they're creating or why their troops are creating the media that the troops are creating related to some much larger strategic picture. So I think about a student who gets to document a really cool mission on a training range, right? And, you know, there's guys stacking up on doors and kicking in doors and clearing rooms and doing the cool stuff, right?
Yeah,
the tactical
stuff.
Right? And a couple of, key leaders from the nearby town are also at the training range watching that training take place. And they have 500 pictures of ingress and egress and door kicking and room clearing. And they have 3 pictures of, that business leader out in town shaking hands with the base commander. And the handshake picture goes on the website. And that troop thinks, what is going, why? Like, those other pictures were so dope. They were so cool. But what mission was at play when that whole event took place? And what ultimately is the message we're trying to send to our local town, our higher headquarters, our, peers and adversaries that are reading everything that we put on the internet? And I hope it gives students a sense of how can I produce the media that I want to produce, in the best and most exciting way possible for me, while also staying dialed into those high-level missions. If your media plugs into that level of relevance, it's likely to have a much farther reach than the cool photo of the day.
It's really interesting what you said there is understanding the why behind not only why we do things, but why other people are doing things, why our adversaries are doing things. And that's a valuable skill as a communicator that not enough people think about and focus on when they're thinking about our career field or when they're thinking about DINFOS. Sure. And the why behind things is something that we focus on everything that we teach. And can you maybe explain a little bit more about why is so important to not only our students, but the career field as a whole?
This reminds me of a course I did get to take while I was at the Air Force News Desk, which was an Introduction to Information Operations course. Really cool class where we went through the joint planning process and planned non-kinetic actions across all of the different information capabilities, like electronic warfare, cyber ops, and public affairs, right? In that environment, I got such a renewed and deepened sense of the strategic value of the communications we make. Yes, it is possible to send a plane somewhere or an artillery unit somewhere and knock down a radio tower. But it is also possible for us to change people's minds while putting fewer people in danger and, spending less money on munitions and all that sort of stuff. So I think shifting my perspective to understanding information as one of the 7 joint functions of warfare made me think about how any piece of media that we make and quality control and release out to the world has the ability to change minds, to affect how people make decisions, to change their perspective on something as small as one operation in their town or as large as a, global great power near peer conflict. And that means that the quality of the things we release matters not only with respect to getting the tactical details right, the AP style and grammar, the good audio, the in-focus photographs, et cetera, but also the relevance factor, the connection between that one piece of media you make and the bigger mission. All the way up at the strategic level.
Yeah. It's a lot of understanding, but it's so important to have all that in order to be that valuable person to leadership, to your commander, to the next person up the chain of command.
That's a great point. That's right. Being able to release that kind of media makes you and your whole shop not just the yearbook club, which I think sometimes is a notion that PA falls into when people who don't understand our career field see us out and about. It can remind some of the most important folks that we're part of the mission doing, the mission executing team as well.
Yeah. I want to shift gears just a little bit to your time as an instructor and your teaching here, because I think it's really important that we cover that, because a lot of our listeners are instructors or people who are interested in that as well, or students that are interested in coming here. And some of those will be your students. I'm fascinated by your master's degree, which again is in media technology and democracy and how those things work together. Mm-hmm. How do you think that having that master's degree and that knowledge sort of puts you ahead as an instructor or helps you as an instructor here?
I think having the master's degree actually connects me back to those first couple of years as a really young instructor here. An advantage I had was recency. You know, I was doing the same work that my graduates would be doing as soon as they graduated, because I had been someone, you know, out jobbing, doing the basic stories, trying to see how everything fit together back when I was teaching basic courses like MCF. And having this interlude of being a student somewhat recently in my adulthood is really important to me because it helps me keep the student experience front of mind. So in that respect, I guess I could have gone to school for anything and, you know, taken that advantage. But I chose the degree program that I went to school for because I really wanted to understand more about the information environment, what kind of dangers we face out there, and how public affairs can be part of the proactive team, you know, inoculating our troops and the public against the attacks that we get in the information space.
Yeah, as far as misinformation, disinformation.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really important. And having that knowledge, I think, is really important to why, to you as an instructor, and why I think that you're as good as you are at what you do, because your knowledge base is so vast. What do you focus on as an instructor? What do you think is really important to you about teaching, about relaying this information to the students? And what do you think kind of sets you apart from other instructors?
Well, that's another thing I guess I could say about the master's program in general. One thing that, you know, I left an in-progress class to go do that degree, and that really weighed very heavy on me.
Yeah, we hate doing that, right?
It's the worst.
Yeah.
But one thing that I knew I was showing my students is that it is good to be dogged in your curiosity.
Yeah.
You know, when something is of interest to you, when it feels relevant, when you don't feel like the people around you are talking about it enough, you can take it upon yourself to pursue understanding that piece of information better. Curiosity then becomes not just an example I want to set in the room, but like core value at the heart of teaching for me. I can be curious not only about our course material, but also about the experiences both in the class and before the class of each of my students. A professor of mine, someone whose advice I highly value when it comes to teaching, said, try to never ask a question to your students that you're not genuinely curious about what each student's answer would be to that question. It has really set the tone for how I try to, you know, have a discussion-based class and build an environment where in overt and covert ways, I am constantly reaffirming back to my students, like, see, you're smart. Like, you have an instinct for this already. You know a lot about this already. I'm giving you a scaffold that will help your instincts and inherent knowledge be understood by the wider community. You know, we have a shared language and that's of high value, but you have a lot of this in you now. And what we're doing here is a simple matter of getting those ideas onto a piece of paper.
Yeah, I love that analogy. I always put it like we give you an outline, but I love that analogy of the scaffold, right? Like we give you the scaffold and then you build the building, right? Like we're giving you these great preparatory tools that you can go and use to become a master craftsman of the art yourself. That's great. That's exactly what we do.
I come back to scaffold a lot. I said it once to a student in that very first iteration of MCF because he was chafing at like the form of news writing, you know, and really struggling with those brief, clear sentences and that very specific form that the beginning of an article takes. And he said, I love writing, but I don't love this. And I said, okay, tonight, go back to your debt and like read a sonnet, like find a poem. There are many types of writing that are very creative that also adhere to a strict form. And sure enough, he did. He came back with like the classic Stood the Watch poem the next day and like one or two other things. And I was like, see, like you see the metal bars and right now you see a jail cell, but it really is a scaffold. It's a structure that you get to build on that supports you sharing the message you want to share. Scaffolding is also a type of like curriculum design and assignment design that I really vibe with. So it's a constant metaphor.
So much stuff.
Yeah.
You know, what is it that you like so much about teaching? You know, you've kind of talked a lot about what you want to convey, but what is it that you personally like so much about being an instructor here?
Yeah, I mean, not to be too earnest about it, but I just really like students. I think it's really cool that people, you know, back in the day on MCF side, I thought it was so exciting to be encountering people right at the beginning of this huge transition, you know, in their lives and career. And now I also am encountering people who are in the midst of a transition to a new type of leader in their workplace. Hearing about what is on their minds is always interesting to me. Being surprised and impressed by people who, you know, pick up a lot of knowledge over the course is endlessly exciting to me. Helping someone out when they're really, really stuck and getting them up to that light bulb moment where things click into place and make sense is also very exciting. And all of those things together are like jet fuel. It is like a really endless source of motivation to continue iteratively improving, you know, not just our course and our curriculum, but my teaching practice. You know, what can I do better this time than the last class before?
I think that that sort of boundless urge to improve and to continue to make sure that your skills develop along with the career field is what makes you one of our best instructors. That's what all great instructors do, right? We can't stay still. And I think that's another thing about our career field that is important to pass along to people who are either prospective students or don't know much about it. You know, we don't exist in a vacuum and we don't we're not a still rock in a river, right? We constantly have to move. We constantly have to think and flow. What sort of strategies and tips would you give to any of these students that are thinking about coming to DINFOS, that are on their way here, people that want more information about what it is that we do? Just what would you tell them about the career field as it is now and sort of what to expect?
I would tell someone just entering this career field now that we are, just as you said, in a state of flux. Things are changing around us. And some things, you know, echo and repeat despite our best efforts to make something different happen. You know, I feel like we've been trying to this whole time that I was studying misinformation and working for the Air Force News Desk. We've been working on this Pacific pivot. And yet, you know, the Middle East continues to loom as like a question and a place where we really have to apply our skills. Right now, all of my examples and my co-instructor, Tech Sergeant Carmichael, all of our examples of disinformation in class are Iranian tweets, you know, from what's been going on in that part of the world. So the career field is in flux as the character of conflict changes and as information takes on more and more of a role as like a space, a medium, ammo in these conflicts. My desire is for public affairs to stay right in the pocket of being the truth tellers in the midst of all of this information chaos and, you know, continuing to build on what it means to be that source of the most accurate information that can be had.
And I think that is really important. Again, I hate to keep repeating myself. You say so many valuable things. It's continuing to be the people who are not only the truth tellers, but have that reputation that we continue to uphold and that we continue to show to the world as public affairs professionals, I think is really important as we exist in this sort of world of misinformation and disinformation where we have AI and we have product creation of so many different things where it's hard mm-hmm. for people to tell what's real and what's not. You know, being that bastion of truth, I think, is vital to the members of our career field. I want to pick your brain just a little bit before I let you go with one last question, just because of your degree and your studies and the things that you've spent time thinking about. As you look towards the future, obviously it's complicated and confusing and no one is a prognosticator, right? Especially as we talk about our career field. But what do you think folks should concentrate on now to prepare for the future of our career field? What things should we concentrate on, focus on, sort of skills that we should kind of develop now so that we can stay future ready, so that we are ready to move in the river and not say that rock in the ocean? God, I did a lot of water stuff there.
Hey, that's all right.
That's okay. I like the ocean.
Yeah. A few things come to mind. I'm glad you brought up the emergence of AI, of large language models, of image and video generation models, in an environment where machines increasingly can play at doing what we do. It is our job to create our products with the unassailable quality that only a human or a couple of humans can bring to that product. I'm not saying that AI isn't an enabler in our world. People are coming up with new interesting applications all the time. But in order to be effective users of that technology, we have to know deeply what quality looks like and know when we're seeing something that is not up to our standards of quality or accuracy. Or you know, integrity, core values, even.
Yeah, credibility, which we just have
credibility.
To maintain. It's so important in our career field. You know, that we're not here to expound at length about AI, but the sort of visceral public backlash that exists around the content creation that mm-hmm. AI makes sometimes, mm-hmm. it continues to back up for me how important it is of doing what it is that we do, being on the front lines, capturing those images, telling those stories, humanizing us, the service members as people, and all the valuable things that we do can only be accomplished by humans. And it's just that emotion and soul that we put into things, I think, is what makes us so valuable as a career field.
Right. So. It's part of why our class exists. You know, there are days in the course that students are like, this is really hard. And we're like, yeah. Great. You know, you're coming up with brand new ideas about trying to solve a problem. That is hard. That is what you're practicing doing here. You know, so it's the heart and the soul, but it's also the rigor. So that's one thing in our career field. I think there's a big focus on the technical skills and some of the critical thinking skills that can't be replicated by these technologies. I think it's also important to understand what adversaries are doing. You know, if we are we are truth tellers, then what are the people who are not telling the truth? Mm-hmm. You know, what are they doing today to try to circumvent our release of factual information?
Yep.
And how, you know, can we look at the chessboard and think three moves ahead and continue training and producing toward these bulletproof, you know, works and practices and media releases? Anything else? I kind of thought it would be nice to have three.
It's always, we always want that rule of three in
there.
I know,
beautiful.
I do the same thing.
The tech, the understanding the adversary. Yo, reading the regs. Honestly.
Making sure you follow the rules.
Reading the
regs. Gosh, that is the most important thing to hit on at the end, isn't it?
Yeah. Reading the regs. The regs are such a bountiful source of the advice I see people seeking all the time on, you know, in public forums, mm-hmm. And even in class. Especially if you have joint pals and you can look at their regs. I had a Navy student come to me with a question last month that the Air Force reg had a clear, written, beautiful answer to that she wouldn't have gotten to know about,
yeah.
because, you know, she doesn't have regular access to that. Joint publications, IPASC is really built on joint publications like 3-61. Which I can't remember the title of right now. Those are protected, more secure. They're like CAC protected, but that's also something that's worth your time to sit and read and understand. You know, policy levels from policy letters from your service chief, from the Secretary of War, from the Office of the Assistant to the Secretary of War for Public Affairs. There's high value stuff in there, and it's great to have the answers to some of the most common questions in our career field on hand.
Yeah, take some of that anxiety away.
That's right, and they're a great North Star. Like, we all have moments where we might be questioning the validity of something we're making or what we're trying to do. And that's what the regs are for. It's great to be able to reference back and know this is how our time and our manpower and our budget should be spent, or this isn't.
Yeah. Man, that's awesome. Is there I could talk to you for another hour, but I won't do that to you. I will just finish up with the standard DINFOS question of, is there anything you'd like to add or anything that we didn't talk about today or anything you want to share with prospective students? Or I'm sure that you have a lot of fans, former students who are going to listen to this episode, but anything that you want to share with the listeners out there about you or our career field?
I want to plug coming here to instruct as an active duty service member.
Heck yeah.
Boy, is it a cool job.
For sure.
I would recommend coming a little later in your career than I did, only because this was such a peak that no assignment that I could take after DINFOS felt like it would compare to the types of rewards and the exciting ops tempo that I experienced while I was here as an instructor. If you can't make it to come back as an instructor, please come back and join us for one of these intermediate courses. It's a great joy of mine to have my entry-level students graduate and now come back to this intermediate-level course and show their chops, and they all have. Or for those same students to come back and be my colleagues and be instructors.
Yeah. Isn't that great?
Yeah.
I have 1, 2, 3 students here, former students here right now that are current instructors.
It's wild.
That's so cool.
It makes me feel
great.
It feels so nice.
Man, Shelby, thanks for joining us. We got a lot of really valuable stuff out of you today, which I knew we were going to, and I really appreciate that. We're going to have you on again in the future, but in the meantime, thanks again for joining us, and I look forward to seeing you on stage as you get your next award. I'll be the guy in the back clapping.
We'll see about that. That's so funny. I appreciate it. This was a great time.
Thank you. I appreciate it. We'll talk to you again soon.